Hello, good morning, Reliability Gang. I hope everyone's having a productive week. We are back with another podcast and we're back. I have not got my right-hand man with me right now, but today is a special episode of the Reliable Talk podcast because we have actually introduced our first guest. We've pre-recorded this on a Teams call, so you may hear a slight drop in quality when it goes to the recording, but you know it is still clear and you can still hear everything we got to say, and as well, it's an incredible podcast. I listened back to it the other day, and the amount of information in this is incredible. I mean, I think when you interview someone whose field, you know, they've lived, breathed that field their whole entire life, you end up gaining so much knowledge, so much wisdom, and so much value out of it. So today's podcast, we have a special guest, Adam Cutler. He's from Oil Analysis Laboratories, and he has his own oil analysis lab. So we talk about oil analysis and how important oil sampling is. And we go from the extremes to particle analysis to the condition of oil viscosity, and we have a lot of different questions and discussion points, and we really do kind of divulge into the whole world of oil analysis. So guys, I hope you really enjoyed today's podcast. I'm not going to talk too much on the introduction. I'm going to get straight into it, and without further ado, here is the podcast. Hello everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Reliable Talk podcast. I've got a good friend with me today, Adam, and how long have we known each other now, Adam?
Probably about 4 or 5 years, I'd say.
5 years, I'd say. Adam is incredible in his field. He's got obviously a lot oil analysis in his blood in terms of knowledge and, you know, expertise in this area. And Adam, just give us a brief explanation of kind of like your journey, how you got involved with oil analysis and condition monitoring in the first place, and kind of like your story, basically, in a nutshell, if you can do. Buddy, that'd be great.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I came to it pretty early. In fact, it's often commented that one of my first three words was oil. So, I came to it pretty early on. My father started off like one of Europe's largest condition monitoring labs.
He's like the guru, isn't he? He's like the guru of oil.
Yeah.
I remember I did a course with Bob Cutler, and that was probably about 4 years ago. And I never knew how vast the subject was. I mean, I always thought, oil analysis, is this going to be worth doing? But after the course, honestly, it was probably the most valuable course I've done, actually, because going into that course, the perception was, in terms of the knowledge I gained out of it, was paramount in terms of what I actually did learn. So sorry just to interrupt, but I had to drop that in there as well. So
he's very proud at the moment because he's just released a book, chapter, yeah, it's been published by Bint. So maybe you're about to show it in the show notes for your
100%. We'll definitely make that accessible. Like, we'll put some links out there. So where can you actually get that then, Adam?
You buy it direct from the British Institutes, from BINT. Right. So you buy it direct from them. So it's got a chapter in that on condition monitoring technologies.
So all that expertise in there, I reckon there's so much value in that book, because when I spent a week with Bob, it was an eye-opener, if I'm honest. It was probably the best course I've done in terms of knowledge I learned, because obviously all the other subjects I've done a lot of different courses in condition monitoring, but I feel like I took the most out of that one. You know, I felt like I knew more about oil and how important it was, kind of like after we, you know, digress into the subjects and everything like that. So yeah, brilliant. I mean, like for me, it was really valuable. And that kind of, you know, puts me on to my next question, that I kind of feel, I don't know about you, Adam, I kind of feel it's oil analysis is a little bit disregarded when it comes to condition monitoring techniques. Because I kind of feel a lot of shine is shined on vibration analysis and ultrasound, and that, you know, a lot them subjects we talk about a lot of different techniques and stuff. Why do you think is it oil gets pushed to one side? Why do you think that is?
I think it's quite simple. I think because it's quite dirty. Particularly people think a lot about engine oils. I know even when it was you get like additive chemists when you're first starting off, it was always you wanted to work with the new, clean, pristine, new formulations. And yeah, like oil analysis was considered kind of like, well, I don't want to get into that. I don't want to get my hands dirty with that. So I think that's how it came about, really. But yeah. I agree, Ed, for like every lab, there's about like 50 vibration companies, I'm sure, for every lab. So
yeah. And
I use Adam personally, you know, his lab for our oil analysis at Maintain, and the results we get incredible in terms of what one sample can tell. And this is what I'm always trying to kind of, shall we say, promote to my customers that are not necessarily having much oil sampling at the moment, is that especially with the gearboxes, that one sample, probably in terms of value and return on investment, this type of condition monitoring probably is the smallest input that gives you probably the biggest output. We all know, say, for example, we're doing a vibration survey. You'll take vibration data on a mixed set of assets over that day, and you'll get a report of it produced over that day, and that costs a set amount. But I kind of feel like in terms of value, one oil sample can give us so much information on the condition of that gearbox, the condition of the oil. So, I mean, for anyone that doesn't know, Adam, what can we tell from like sampling the gearbox, and why is it so important in terms of, you know, your machinery, in terms of a manufacturing plant, like gearboxes, lube oil, them type of things?
Yeah. Well, obviously a lot of you guys will be familiar with obviously vibration and thermography and acoustics, and that all works once there's wear already occurring. So,
yeah.
So you're starting at a point that there's already wear in the system, and you and obviously identifying and localizing it and particularly pointing to what it is. And those techniques are really good for those technologies. But when you come to looking at the cause of the wear, so what's causing it, oil analysis really comes to its own. So it's like, for instance, you could have that the oil is overoxidized, so it's got too sludged, or it's been in there too long.
Okay.
And it's got acidic and attacking the gearbox. It could be the cases that you've got the wrong oil in there. So maybe it's maybe it's the wrong oil because you put the wrong oil in, or maybe it's the wrong oil because you've got leakage of one oil to another.
Yeah.
Like a seal leak. And you can also see the main ones, dirt and water.
The main culprits, I suppose.
The main culprits, dirt and water, the main culprits and gearboxes are the main things you'll see. And you see them before you see the wear. So it's the idea is to try and identify the problems very early on.
Yeah. I mean, when we're talking P to F curve, the problem to the failure, what I kind of find is with gearbox analysis, you know, where we find a problem with oil analysis is far, far earlier than we ever would with vibration or even thermography. I mean, temperature is even worse, you know, because obviously friction will create that heat. And by that point, you've probably already got wear metals in your oil as well. So, I mean, so Adam, let me try to get this right in my head. Wear metal analysis, how does that differ in terms of when, you know, when we do a sample, when you guys analyze the wear metals in there, how is that different to monitoring the oil condition?
Okay, so when you're looking at the oil condition, you're looking generally at sort of physical properties, so
yeah,
viscosity, so how thick it is. You may also be looking at some contaminants, so how much water is there. But when you're talking about wear metal analysis, you basically, as part of the analysis, you have to heat the sample to twice the surface temperature of the sun.
Okay.
10,000 degrees Celsius.
Wow.
So it's pretty hot when you have to heat up the sample.
I mean, what equipment do you do that with? I mean, this must be extremely advanced equipment to be able to do this.
Yeah, it's called ICP for short, which everyone uses, but that stands inductively coupled plasma. But everyone just uses the abbreviation ICP.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, a lot easier that.
A lot easier to say, yeah. And basically, yeah, so we heat the samples up to very, very high temperatures. And as the sample cools down, so it's only in there for a couple of seconds, as it cools down, the energy that's taken on in heat gets released as different wavelengths of light. And you can tell by which elements are present by the different wavelengths of light. So it's a little bit like at school when you put one metal into a flame and it went purple or green or blue. It's that sort of principle, but just on a more precise and industrial scale, and
telling
elements are present. And that's because every lab pretty much in the world runs that sort of system.
Yeah.
No different in that way. But I think one of the things is the limitation of that technology is it only really looks at particles less than 5 microns.
Right. So okay.
When we talk about wear, that's important. We're looking at stuff that's greater than 15 microns, and you could have stuff that's maybe 80 or 100. And just to put into scale, the width of a human hair is 80 microns. That's eight.
Wow. Just so you guys can kind of understand when we're talking
into concept. So numbers. Width of a human hair. So if we're talking that really elemental analysis only works best on less than 5 microns, it's missing most of the it only works for the very smallest particles because you have to burn them all, otherwise they're undercooked.
Particles are undercooked.
So it's a little bit like you have like if you're trying to measure a chicken by burning it and you have like a raw center, that's the undercooked chicken is not measured. So you need to cook the whole thing.
There's a lot that is missing, obviously under 5 microns, isn't there? There's a lot more that needs to be looked at in terms of the scale. And they're probably the wear particles that you need to be worried about because they're the ones that,
Absolutely. I mean, for myself, that was kind of the reason we started All Analysis Laboratories, was because the wear metal analysis was only really picking up a fraction of the wear and wasn't really showing all the different parts of it that you could find.
It wasn't showing the whole picture, was it, Adam? And that's obviously another reason why we kind of teamed up with yourself in terms of using the samples in terms of your lab, because we can give that information. I think that's really important as well to be able to understand that, because by the time you'd even see probably, shall we say, all degradation in your vibration data in terms of it not actually creating that film or actually, you know, wear particles or wear, you know, you're talking a long time after you're going to be able to spot this with oil. So, I can't stress enough how important it is to be able to do these samples. And you don't even have to do them every month. It can be, you know, even quarterly samples, depending on what the criticality of the gearbox is. But the thing is, with what I kind of not shocked about, but it's a bit of an eye opener that the majority of plants, even on the critical gearboxes, you know, don't even have a plan in terms of how they even change the oil. I mean, some don't even do it. So it's kind of run it to just destruction, really, that, you know, we don't even understand the condition. And by the time we understand the condition, we're measuring vibration there. And by that time, it's maybe probably too late for that gearbox. You know, you've probably done damage already. So I think the whole point of this conversation as well is to raise the awareness that oil sampling can get that indication so early that you're not going to be able to, shall we say, damaged your gearbox, especially a big critical gearbox that could be worth a lot of money. As soon as you get that wear, it's very difficult to go back, isn't it, Adam?
And absolutely. And the main thing is picking it up early in the very, very earliest stages. I mean, normal analysis, we're a condition monitoring people and we work on trends.
Yeah.
And I've built my career working on trends. When you're looking at and that's how we've always worked on wear metal analysis as labs, as an industry. But with some of our new technology we've introduced, we can pick up that wear much, much, much earlier and detect all the larger wear particles, which are the important bits, and help predict those failures much, much earlier. So I think a lot of people maybe who don't do oil sampling that often or have not done it at all, a lot of it, I feel from experiences, people have maybe said, "Oh, I did a sample about 5 years ago, didn't see anything, and I don't want to do it again."
It's a little bit like, totally relate to that, Adam. It's a bit like, you know, we'll do a test on a motor and it's fine, there's no issues. It's like, we don't need to monitor that anymore. And it's like, well, you know, conditions can change, guys. You know, this is all right now, but you know, within 3-4 months it may not be. And I think that's the idea, isn't it? This has to be consistently done to add value, because you could be testing this gearbox for 4 years and it might be fine, you know, no issues, you know, which is probably fairly rare in terms of, you know, changing oil. But then within 1 month, the oil condition within 3-4 days, it could change. And I think that's the issue as well. Like, we don't know when, shall we say, where it's going to happen or you know, oil's going to degrade. But as long as we're consistently doing it in a scheduled time period, what we're going to do is avoid that failure. And I think that's just trying to understand, like, you know, on an RCM type of level, where your critical assets are originally and be aware of that. But then as well, understand the failure modes of them, because I know a lot of people say, right, we'll do vibration analysis on these gearboxes. Brilliant. But let's be honest, as a condition monitoring technique, it is probably further down the line than what something oil sampling could do as well. So the combination of the two is very powerful. And what I'm trying to do is trying to make people aware it's not just vibration analysis where we can win these other areas that we're kind of trying to get a little bit, shall we say, proactive in as well. So you know, I think honestly, all sampling for me is a big eye opener. And I think, I think it's going to do a lot better in the future. I don't know about you, Adam, because having a look at even the customers I have at the moment, there's not a lot of awareness of how important it is. Yeah. Would you agree with that? Would you say something that's going to...
I think a lot of people will maybe just, when you think of oil, they probably just think of like their car, for instance, and they think, well, I put it in, I take it to dealer, and you don't really like pay too much of attention to it. Say, oh, I change it. And that's sometimes that's the only thing they do. I know, obviously, some of them don't even change. I don't even do the changing.
Yeah, all the servicing, yeah.
Servicing, yeah. But I think sometimes you need someone to have had like a little bit of pain to actually realize it. So a lot of our customers we win are people who have had a failure, send us the sample to investigate it, and then go, actually, yeah, we should have been doing the sampling in the first place.
Yeah, yeah,
and
I see.
I'm sure it's the same with yourselves. Like it's that sort of motivates people to say, okay, we'll invest in like an analysis program or invest in like vibration analysis. Obviously, as you said, with ourselves, it's not too expensive to start up, start doing oil analysis sampling for the cost of a bottle, as opposed to like sometimes some big wireless setup systems.
Oh gosh, yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? Like, you know, if you're going to have any starting point in terms of doing this, if you're not doing anything, like oil sampling could be a great place to start because the cost is highly low compared to all the other services that kind of, you know, you do get involved with, because obviously the price point is just one sample. It's not really, you know, it's not really time based. It's one sample that gets taken by the customer in the right way as well. And we'll get onto that in a minute in terms of taking a sample and what's the best way to take a sample. Because I know it's very important. There's no point in sending the sample away if you have something compromised or you've not taken it in the right way, you know, because I've got a few examples of that as well, which, you know, you'll probably laugh at, Adam, as well, in terms of what we've seen in the past as well. But obviously, of course, you know, it is important in terms of, you know, a condition monitoring plan, that it could be a good place to start if you've not got anything going at the moment, and gradually build your way to the other things, and, you know, raise the awareness that way. So what is what would you say to the emerging technology? So obviously technology is moving forward and fast, you know, in the vibration world, wireless sensors are now something that we're offering in terms of what we can do, and we can offer a lot more in terms of, you know, inaccessible assets and stuff like that now due to technology improving and stuff like that. And obviously technology is improving every area. It's not just vibration analysis, obviously in the oil world and labs and equipment. So what is there out in the future? Because obviously this is what you do. You live, breathe this, you know, a bit like what I do with the vibration stuff and the other services. But this, it interests me so much. You know, for me, I was like, I want to be a sponge and learn about all the new emerging technologies. So what is new, Adam? What is coming? What can we expect? And how can it kind of change the condition monitoring world?
Okay, so in terms of new, I mean, the first thing, we've already discussed it a little bit, was talking about the lubeware technology, which is our method for detecting wear much, much earlier by detecting all the particles, not just the small ones.
Not just the small ones, yeah.
So that's really key, and that's been sort of emerging. As I said, that's just now coming into textbooks, and it's obviously been on, we've been on television. I've been on National Geographic Channel talking
wow.
about
it. Wow.
But no,
when was that? I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, that was on a program called Car SOS. I don't know if you've ever watched it, but it's
not heard of it. I need to see that.
Yeah. So we had like the TV crew in the lab, so we had to close the lab for a day while we had all the TV crew and that in, and
awesome.
did a sample going through. But it's quite an interesting experience.
Cool. Yeah, really cool. Really cool.
So yeah, this is my first podcast as well. So I've got the bunch now too. So
well, yeah, definitely, yeah. No, I'm like I say, this is, to be fair, we Maintain Reliable Talk, we're only about six podcasts in now, and we've had a great response. But you know what? I think one of my aims is to be able to improve reliability across the UK. And for me to be able to do that, I need to be able to bring professionals. And obviously, this for you is a subject you've been in your life. You've, you know, been taught by the guru of oil, and you've had it, you know, since, you know, you've grown up and everything like that. Like you say, your first word with oil, you know what I mean? Which is crazy. But I think there's a lot of awareness that can be kind of learnt from yourself as well. So, you know, it's my job as well to be able to try to just, you know, get as many knowledgeable people on here as possible and try to spread that reliability love. You know what I mean? It's definitely something that needs to happen. So, no, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule, because I could have probably, you know, assume you're very busy to come in, you know, have a chat with us to be able to, you know, spread some awareness about oil analysis and how vitally important it really is for the industry and, you know, how it can, you know, benefit so many different factories in terms of understanding the oil condition or, you know, your gearbox condition on so many assets across different sites, you know, especially the critical ones anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
So where can people... I for me, I'm so happy I did the level one lubrication course because, to be honest, I thought I knew a lot about oil, but it turned out I didn't know anything after the course. My head was blown away. Where can people learn about it in a nice bite-sized chunk way? And what resources are out there? So, you know, any reliability guys want to sort of improve their knowledge on it and awareness, where can they find that information?
Okay, so I've actually got a blog I started in 2018 called Learn All Analysis. So it's learnallanalysis.com. And basically the reason I started it is there are like training courses out there, but a lot of them are sort of paid training courses and they're can be quite expensive and it's several days classroom time. And some people are sometimes a bit intimidated by, I'm going to spend a 6-day training course in a classroom going to do that. And so you just want to just have a kind of like a gentle introduction. And as well, obviously with current climate now with COVID, it's been a bit difficult to have classroom courses as well.
Definitely.
So, so a lot of people have been wanting something they can just do and look at it themselves and just learn a little bit about oil analysis and kind of like a non-intrusive way.
Like a non-classroom way as well. Cause I think sometimes it's a little bit like pressure. You know what I mean? Like when you're in these environments, you know, sometimes I think, to be fair, learning should be done in a relaxed way. Cause I think the more relaxed you are, the more you kind of digest and take in. So that's great that you have that resource out there. So just Adam, tell everyone again where they can find that.
So that's learnoilanalysis.com.
Right. Learnoilanalysis.com. So check that out, guys. Like if you're just interested, you know, if you just want to have a little browse and have a look and, you know, even if you want to sort of expand your knowledge, I'm sure there's plenty of content on there that can really help you, you know, understand oil analysis a little bit better and understand why it's so important. Because for me, I think it's a subject that is very vast, but it's only big when you start to uncover the first initial steps of it. When you start to dig a little bit deeper, it can turn into something that is very interesting. And, you know, for me, it's a lot of chemistry is involved as well, isn't it? There's a lot of chemistry involved in terms of additives. And I remember when I was in the class with Bob and he was sort of doing these equations in terms of understanding like the chemistry, like the reactions of certain chemicals and additives. And, you know, this is why it's so important that the oil that you have in your gearboxes are kept in good condition. Because any small minor external changes, whether that be ingress of water or viscosity change, can typically change that oil so vastly that it's not even doing its job anymore. So you might have oil in there, but it may not be lubricating whatsoever, which for me was a bit like, oh my God, wow. So, you know, even when people have the sight glasses, they're like, oh, that's okay, there's oil in there, that's fine. But is it doing its job? Is it creating that film between the moving parts, which is essentially what it's doing, isn't it? So if you could just explain that, Adam, how does that film and how are the additives, for example, like a lot of thing people ask me about EP added sort of additives and that additive, how does that create different, shall we say, circumstances for the gearbox to operate in different pressures and different ways?
Okay. So first thing, just you obviously mentioned before, people just look at sight glasses and everyone's classically rubbing oil between your fingers. If it doesn't feel gritty, that's another one.
Oh, that's fine.
That's fine. Yeah, it's a classic one. And I mean, I actually had a sample that was actually it got so much wear, it was actually heavy. You could actually feel the weight of the sample.
Oh, because it was just
it got 20% wear. But the oil was still not gritty at the top, which is, I thought, well, what? How much do you need to be able to feel it? So that's why you do have all these technologies to test it. But in answer to your question about different additives, so you've got, when you start off with your oils, they'll all have basically an antioxidant and a rust protection additives. So they're often called RNO additives for rust and oxidation. And that's like your basic in pretty much all your oils you'll come across.
So that's basically what you'd have as a basic in your basic.
So you've got your base oil. So you'll have like, there's various ways of classifying, but you may think it's like mineral or synthetic. And then you add your additives on top of that. Then after you've got your rust and oxidation, you then start thinking about what properties you want your oil to have. So you may want some wear protection. So this is where they introduce two which are called ZDDP, or the other one is EP, so for extreme pressure. ZDDP tends to be hydraulics and engines, and you've then got your EP oils, which is the extreme pressure ones. You'll be able to know because they're the oils that smell very sulfury and don't smell very pleasant when you do it. And that's the EP additive having reacted and causing what's called mercaptans, which give the sulfury smell, which is kind of
the horrible smell in the oil. Yeah.
But yeah, so basically the way they work is a few ways that they work, but the main way they work is that they basically have sulfur in them, and the sulfur reacts with the iron or whatever the component is made of and makes a toughened coating. So iron sulfide, for instance, if it reacts and forms a toughened layer on this of the iron, is actually harder than iron itself. So you've kind of coating and painting it.
So it's a bit like a chemical reaction.
It is a chemical reaction
of the machine, isn't it? Within the machine. And yeah, that for me was like, wow, components. How incredible is that? So the additive in there reacts with the actual metal as it creates a chemical reaction for it to actually be more hard wearing. And that for me is incredible. Just the thought of how much technology in terms of chemistry is involved in these additives. And what Adam can tell from his lab in the samples is all of the additive content, can't you, in terms of what there is in every single, and this is where we're looking at more of the oil condition rather than the wear particles. And this is all included in one sample as well. And what we'll do actually, guys, we'll do a little case study and we'll put one of these samples, basically all this information, what you get in one sample on the Maintain website. And this is all coming from Adam's lab, you know, because we work closely together and, you know, he you know, he's driven so many different samples. And do you know what? How much value our customers have got from this service that we provide with Adam is incredible, because it really does give us insight to what to do in terms of the condition rating. And it gives us insight to what to do with the, whether we change oil or whether we look at, you know, the gearbox and oil, or whether we trend more with vibration analysis. There's a lot of different scenarios that it can come. But what we'll do, we'll put a example oil sample out on the website as well, so you guys can see all of this and every single additive as well. You'll see within this report, and you'll see all the wear particles as well. So the information is just vast, but I'm just kind of raised that point just to sort of try to raise the awareness that the additives are quite important in terms of the makeup of the oil. And when you get a breakdown of one of the additives, for example, if it's the sulfur breakdown and the EP is not doing its job anymore, it could potentially cause damage to the machine as well. So getting that early in terms of understanding whether the oil condition is okay is massively important, because if you can catch that early, you may not have any wear particles yet, but if you can catch that early, you avoid the damaging part, if you know what I mean. And I think that to be able to be proactive like that is, you know, incredibly, you know, incredible for reliability. It is a big, big win for reliability as well. So Adam, literally, we're going to have to wrap this up in 5 minutes, but there's just a couple more questions I feel that are quite important, you know. And obviously one is taking the sample. So we all know that oil sampling is great and what it can do, but it's only as reliable as the sample that is taken.
Yeah.
So say, for example, we're taking the sample from the gearbox. What would be the best practice for that? How would we do it? What would be the steps, shall we say, the quick steps to be able to create and take a good sample?
Okay, so it depends what the environment around the sample is. So, I mean, I've been into some sites and there's water dripping from the ceiling because it's so humid in the area.
Yeah.
And the question is, they're really worried about water content in the gearboxes. Well, obviously, the point you need to look at is don't contaminate the sample when you're taking the sample.
Yeah.
Is the first thing. Generally, like if you've got like a dedicated like dipstick or a sampling valve, that's good because you've got a good repeatable point to take it from. So you want to make sure you do it the same way each time as a start. When you are taking a sample, you ideally want to take something from the system. It's the mid level of the system, so you don't want to drag it all from the bottom, because you'll just bring all the debris that's at the bottom.
And not from the sump as well, because a lot of people would do that in terms of, you know, having a sump and having a twist valve where they can eject oil, but generally that's at the bottom. And what you get is everything obviously falls to the bottom. So generally what you're going to get is all the crap from the gearbox in the sample. And it may give you a bit of a compromised sample, shall we say. So that's when I learned from Bob.
So yeah, so you want to get something from ideally the mid of the tank, and you want to also get something that's at operating temperature. So sometimes it may not be safe to have it running when you're taking a sample unless you've got like a dedicated port to take the sample from. Yeah. But you don't want to have it have been standing for 3 weeks and then take a sample.
Yeah.
Because practically the data you'll get will be very limited.
Yeah.
It's not mixing up, and all the wear will be sat at the bottom, all the dirt and water will be at the bottom, and you don't really get an accurate reflection. So you really want to get the sample that's as close to operating conditions as is safe to do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. And as well, another point I'd like to add, I had a previous customer that, you know, they were doing their own sampling, but unfortunately they had a specific person doing it. And to be honest, he wasn't too invested in condition monitoring in general, kind of a bit of a fitter. Kind of just been given the tasks, but it's education and awareness as well. But he was using the same tube to take these samples.
Yeah.
And what they found was these samples kept coming back as like, red samples. But what they found was he was using this old tube for every single sample and reusing it. So obviously the best practice is to get a massive roll of tube and obviously use, you know, brand new tube for each sample. It's quite important, because if not, you're just going to get compromised samples and you're not going to be able to get repeatable and good, reliable results, because all the crap from one sample may be going into the next sample, the next sample, the next sample, and on and on. So obviously, you know, clean, reliable samples is very important, because the last thing you want to do is to be able to act on information that may be compromised because we've not taken a good sample to begin with. So the practice of good reliability needs to start from the beginning and be carried through, because obviously when you get this sample into the lab, you've got all this high tech, you know, equipment that's probably cost hundreds of thousands of pounds. And if someone's just using the same tube, it's kind of like, oh, you know, you think, well, why are we doing all this if this can't be right as well? So obviously education and awareness of how to take samples is something that we can provide as well for all our customers. And if it is something that you're interested in, it's something that we can do as well, just to be able to ensure that part is done right. I feel that's quite important, because when you understand, you've got the awareness of that, we should be good to go in terms of understanding your sampling and moving forward in the future as well. So last question, Adam, I know we've kind of probably focused a little bit more on gearboxes and stuff like that, because within our industry it's quite profound in terms of how much assets and kit, you know, gearboxes run, if you know what I mean, in terms of industry. But what other things can you test for in terms of oil? It's not just gear oil, is it? Just give us a list and a quick snapshot of things that we can test.
So basically all the machinery fluid, so it can be hydraulic oil, compressor oils, obviously we said gear oils, any type of engine oils. We also do the fuels, do coolants, and we can also do one thing that's sometimes not thought of is filter analysis. So we can do the analysis of filters from filtered systems. Particularly one thing that's often overlooked on those systems is the wear material often gets trapped in the filter, so it's not in the general circulation. So if you've got a real fine filter on the system, it can be useful to check the filters as well. Other than that, coolants and AdBlues as well. That's more engine-related stuff. But, greases as well. So probably for your industry, grease systems, we can check the grease as well for the condition of the grease.
Really? I mean, that's quite interesting. How in terms of grease analysis, what would be required to be able to take that information? Because we can tell so much information from the grease. And a lot of the time, you know, when we're doing RCA studies, the colour of the grease or the way maybe the soap may have separated from the oil in terms of the thickener can tell us a lot of information about the relationship of that bearing, whether it's got hot or whether there's been excessive heat within that bearing, or whether the right grease was used in the first place. How much grease do we need to be able to get a sample, Adam?
Well, to be honest, we don't need that much grease to be able to do it. I mean, we give a 100ml bottle, but you don't need to put 100 grams of grease into it.
Yeah.
If you could get something like 10 grams, we can make do with that. But I've worked with less before, and we'll do what we think's the most appropriate sweet on it. But I mean, if you could quarter fill the bottle, that's plenty enough grease for what we would require to test. And we do get a lot of work from failed rail greases is one contract we have. And they're literally like about a gram of grease they have from the failed bearings, and that's all we get as part of the root cause effect analysis. So yeah, we can work. We're quite used to working on very small volumes of grease.
That's interesting you say that as well, because I kind of feel a lot of people forget about big bearings and the grease, because essentially it's like the oil, isn't it? You know what I mean? So, you know, if you can sample that regularly as well, you know, what a great way to be able to understand the condition of that element that creates that bearing to be able to rotate. Because, you know, without that grease, we all know what's going to happen. It's going to fail, isn't it? You know what I mean? So in terms of different types of greases and stuff like that, how important is it to have the right grease for the right application?
Well, I think that's the same with any lubricant. It's you want the appropriate lubricant for
that. Yeah, but I'm trying to find that. And like in this industry right now, there's a lot of grease companies that kind of say, oh, well, we've got the one size fits all. You can use this grease for everything. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, well,
yeah,
really, because a lot of different, I mean, in my mind, a lot of different applications would require different types of grease. And I kind of feel like a lot of companies maybe get duped into maybe using a specific supplier and just having a one size fits all grease. But is it the best for reliability for different applications? Because, for example, I may go to a site, they may have some big fan bearings, you know, that, you know, maybe require more EP additive and stuff like that, or maybe possibly high temperature, depending where they are. But then you may have different types of equipment as well. And not even that, you may have food grade grease that needs to go in certain areas and different areas. But obviously, in terms of trying to save time, a lot of factories will just try to use one. But what is the damage and implication of doing that when, you know, this lubricant or this oil is so important to the reliability of the machine?
Yeah. So you could have, obviously, the one of the things is obviously the equivalent of viscosity, which is like the grease grade. So like usually like a two is like a common grade to use. But obviously getting the right basically viscosity grade for the grease is one thing to look at. Other than that, you also want to look at the soap type. And the important thing is to look at, assuming that the bearing has been greased before, what's the grease that was in there beforehand?
Yeah.
But one
contamination can be a big problem.
Because that's really is a big issue, in that grease incompatibility can cause a lot of problems.
Yeah. It's that reaction, isn't it, of the additives that could potentially cause havoc in that bearing.
Yeah.
And cause it to fail as well, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So I mean, we've had examples of failed bearings where that is exactly the case. So yes.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So, choosing the right grade of grease. I think a lot of people tend to use the same greases because the risk of someone who's just greasing, picking up any old grease.
Exactly. Because that can kind of be counterproductive as well, where you may have different greases that are better for applications, but without the awareness and the management of that, you could potentially easily pick up the wrong grease, go to the start, you know, causing the problems rather than preventing them as well. So I think definitely a mixture would be good in terms of understanding application and as well just understanding the right types of grease for the right product in terms of, you know, your application and what you're trying to run and how it could have potentially affect the machine reliability as well. Definitely.
And as well, one of the things I listened to one of your other podcasts about over greasing systems. So again, that's something to watch out for as well, is that it can be too much of a good thing as well in terms of
we see it all the time where, you know, a lot of people will be like, right, well, these self greasers are the solution to all of our problems, but they'll whack one on and they'll forget about it, and we all know that things can fail. And, you know, one of the springs had failed with one of our previous customers, and this was an area that we couldn't access, and so we couldn't really monitor it, but because they put one on, they assumed it was working, but because it had failed and they'd taken it off the PPM list because they generally would go around with a grease gun and go up the gantry to grease this item. It failed, you know, because they kind of put in a measure to prevent that, but they're forced to fail it in not being able to check it. So, you know, it's very important that if self-greases are used, that there's some sort of way that you check the self-greases are working. Or as well, you know, what we are doing at Maintain now as well, we've got self-greasers that, you know, are wired into a panel, into a 12 volt. So when the machine runs, it will grease. And when the machine turns off, it will stop. Because a lot of the time people were putting these fixed greases on, but the machine will start stopping operation. But obviously, if it's just a spring-loaded ejector, it's going to start ejecting the grease when the machine's not running. And we all know that's not good in terms of good practice, you know, especially if the machine's only running, I don't know, half an hour a day, you're clearly going to over lubricate that bearing if it's trying to eject 24 hours in the day, if you have not set that up right as well. So these self greases that we do as well have a monitor in terms of basically say when it's broken or not ejecting. You can get a text message alert on your phone, which is incredible. But that's technology now. And obviously, it wouldn't be cost effective to do that with every single asset on site. But your real critical ones, I definitely recommend it, because, you know, it then allows you to get the correct amount of grease and you don't have to worry about it. And if there is an issue, you're going to get notified about it as well. So, yeah, that's called smart lubrication. But I don't know if we're quite there yet. But I mean, some factories are adopting heavily into it. Some are not so aware about it, which is, you know, which is another conversation, I think, for another kind of podcast really in itself. Isn't it, Adam? So, Adam, we're going to wrap this up now. But anything else you'd like to add, Adam? Please, you know, now's the time to chat about it. If you're, you know, on social media, if you're on LinkedIn, let people know where you can find you. Any blog articles or any sort of support information, let people know. This is a chance just to throw it all out there.
Okay. So, first of all, thanks for having me on the show.
You can find
us on LinkedIn. Just search for Oil Analysis Laboratories. You can find, obviously, we've already mentioned the Learn About Oil Analysis at learnoilanalysis.com, or you can find out about buying oil analysis samples or anything about that at oilanalysislab.com.
Brilliant. Thank you, Adam. Thank you so much for your time. We'll probably do this again at some point. I think there's so much to talk about. You know what I mean? I don't think we can do it in one podcast, you know, but I think next time we get you one, we'll digress a little bit more deeper into, shall we say, the chemistry of things. And, you know, we can talk about the new technologies that are emerging and maybe like some of the tests that you do in the lab and how, you know, because I find that very interesting, this equipment, because I love equipment. I love vibration equipment and all that type of tech. So it'd be good to have a chat about how, you know, these incredible pieces of equipment actually acquire the data and how that can be presented. But what I'll do, guys, I'll put this into a little mini blog, and on the website, you'll be able to see an example of an oil sample. So if you guys are interested and you want to know more about it, get in touch with me and we can help you guys out in your reliability journey. But thank you so much, Adam. I appreciate your time, buddy. And guys, thank you for all tuning in. Take care.
So guys, I hope you enjoyed it. That was really insightful. So much knowledge from Adam, and I've known him for a long time, and it's just great to be able to have these conversations and capture them, and to be able to kind of like, you know, put that out to the community of reliability and the reliability gang and everyone who's involved in this as well. So like I said, you know, I think oil sampling is massively underused at the moment. I don't think many companies are kind of adopting it in the way they should be, especially with the critical gearboxes or, you know, hydraulic oil or the critical process that they have. So, you know, if you are interested, get in contact with us at Maintain at info@maintain.com. And yeah, guys, I really hope you enjoyed the podcast, because that's what we're trying to do. We're going to try to interview a few more people who are experts in their field, because we don't claim to know everything. We kind of like to learn and obviously try to get as much knowledge in all the subjects and the things that we do acquire. But as well, what we do is we team up with people that, you know, can help our customers as well. And I think we're always striving towards that reliability excellence and using the best people within the field or the experts or people that are really passionate about what they do, then we can really drive that reliability for you guys as well. So guys, I really hope you enjoyed it. Enjoy your week. And yeah, I'll be back another week next week with a new podcast, and we'll be talking about lubrication and lubrication factor, a new reading that we've integrated within our collectors. We're going to now try to keep these podcasts rolling weekly. It's been so busy for us recently. It's no excuse, because I feel like these podcasts need to go ahead anyway, regardless of how busy we are. We need to make time. But yeah, we were going to really try to keep it consistent from this point on. So guys, hope you have a great week, and thank you so much for tuning in again. Thank you for all the support, and yeah, have a great week.